time to tell the neighbor that Charlie et al. Is on. It's time that you can listen to eras long bygone. So email all your loved ones or call them on your phone and tell them Charlie Evers is on. It may be terminal wrinkles, it may be Hillary's hair, it may be on top of the courthouse, you bet old Charlie's there. You may be invited to dinner, but tell them you can't come. The Charlie Evers is home.
Not Charlie Evers today, but Glenn Coble, Scott Spears sitting in for our pal Charlie Evers, who's off recuperating an energy issue. And Charlie, we'll be glad to see you soon again.
Give us a call.
Yeah, whatever you're out there doing right now. Apparently Jeff Ruth is not listening this morning.
Okay.
Because we used his name in vain so many times.
Oh, let's call him something bad.
Call him up, yeah.
No, just call him something bad.
I'll tell you what, if we said there was a free buffet,
he'd be here.
He'd be here. He would hear that.
Matter of fact, I'm surprised the phone didn't ring right after you said that.
He would hear that in a coma. But right before the break, what we were talking about was, who's your 3 a.m. person and what qualities are important in that person? And I just think it's somebody who you feel comfortable with and who feels needed. But you got to tell that person because sometimes they don't know.
Well, I've told you that mine would be Reverend Kiger. And Dan, you'd have to be a minister's kid like I am to know that ministers kind of expect to be called at any time of the day or night. Not that they like it, but they expect it. So I'm not going to call Dan up and say, hey, you're my 3 a.m. guy. I think he probably wouldn't be surprised at all if I told him that. But we never socialize. We never get together. But he's one of those people I always feel comfortable that if I have something to say. Now, I've cried on his shoulder. I got fired from OU, and I went and cried on his shoulder. Now he was my minister, and a lot of people cry on the minister's shoulder. But it was different. He was a friend, and I went and talked to him. But anyway,
I don't think I've ever cried on anybody's shoulder.
I've only cried on two people's shoulders. Three. Dan and my wife and my brother when my sister passed away. Yeah.
I don't know. Emotion doesn't hit me in that way.
Doesn't usually hit me in that way. It has to be terribly earth-shattering stuff for me to, like a death or loss of a job.
But, you know, as I've said before, I think my emotions were left out.
You're behind the door when you're passing out the emotions.
When that was all being doled out, I don't think I was there. And I think it all has become... And I'll tell you, in recent days, it's been interesting because the conversation about being too private has been a conversation the last couple of days. And I don't know what that is. Why would anybody care what I was doing?
Do you think of yourself as empathetic?
Empathetic?
Yeah.
Well, I think you have to have been through the situation to be empathetic.
Okay.
You can be sympathetic.
Maybe you're not old enough to be totally empathetic.
I can be empathetic if I've been through the situation.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying.
But I think more than likely everybody's more sympathetic than empathetic because you can sympathize with the person, but you can't empathize.
Okay. I'm going to have to think that one through.
Well, like, let's say you've never been in a car crash.
Yeah.
Now, you can have sympathy for somebody who's been in a car crash, but you can't be empathetic because you've never been in one.
Never been there, yeah.
Yeah.
Well, maybe that's the difference between you and me in that I'm 73 and you're 30-something. And so you haven't gone through as many things as I've gone through, including that car crash, your parents dying. I've probably been through just about everything except for I have not been through water torture. and I've been through the Army, and I've been through a lot of things that you haven't been through. So maybe that's why.
Yeah, but there are things like that kids face, awful things, crimes, that I can't be empathetic to because I didn't have those things happen to me.
Well, see, But, I did, so, yeah.
But, I mean, I, you know, it's just...
Yeah,
that'll never happen.
Well, I
could be that. I could be 100 years old, and I'm never going to be empathetic.
Well, I can beat you up and throw you down and take your money.
Not as a child.
No,
not as
that's
a child.
True. That's
so
true.
It'll never happen. You know, sometimes that door just closes and is never going to reopen.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah, I had all my money stolen from me as a paper boy at age 12, so I had a little bit of that.
Well, I'm talking about major traumas.
We got the money back, by the way.
Well, as long as you got the money back.
Yeah.
Cops
found the guy.
These are the things in life that are fascinating.
Yeah.
And fascinating
they
the
are.
People.
Yeah.
Because you never really think about who your real friend... What's the difference between a friend and an acquaintance?
Yeah. And I call some of my friends acquaintances, but they really are friends, but I call them an acquaintance because I don't like Dan Kiger. I might tell somebody he's an acquaintance of mine because I don't spend time socializing with him. But in my heart, he's a friend.
Yeah. Well, you know the new term, bestie.
Yeah, I hate it.
But you hate that?
Yeah.
Why do you hate that term?
I just think it cheapens it.
But is it a best friend, right?
Yeah.
Okay. So who's your bestie?
I have none.
You don't have one?
My wife.
Your wife?
Yeah.
Now... Well, see, I can't figure out who mine would be because I have a lot of friends.
Yeah, and you don't care if they leave.
And I don't care if they leave. Well, that really sticks out, doesn't it? That really sticks out, doesn't it? That has stuck out more than anything else I think on this show ever.
It befuddles me.
Now, let's get to the brass tacks on this. What is wrong with that?
For you, it works. That's all I can say. And I don't, you know... You're a friend of mine,
right.
and I'm happy that you can feel that way. And I gotta admit, I don't care a lot about many of the people I know. I that sounds terrible, but I wouldn't mind letting them go if I have to. And I've let an awful lot of people that meant a lot to me go just because that's what life does that to you.
Well, I'll tell you, I was having a conversation last night with somebody. This is interesting. And I won't say who this conversation was with, but this person, who is a friend, recently started doing something very positive. Okay.
Did that person just ding you?
No. Oh, okay. I have this phone on me, and I'm dinging now all
yeah,
over the place.
You're dinging.
But this person started doing something very positive with their life. But it's something you can quit doing. You know, it's something you could stop. Okay.
Okay.
Well, going to school.
Okay.
Okay. This person just recently started going back to school, and I think they've been a little frustrated. I don't think they're dropping out or anything, but I told them, I said, you know, you have all the traits and abilities possible to achieve your goal at this particular point, and I know you want to achieve your goal. I don't think everybody should go to college, but if you want to and it's what you need and I know you want it, then I'm behind it. Okay, so this person was getting frustrated, clearly, about college, and I said...
Can understand that.
And I said, you know, you're my friend... And I like you, but I like you enough to write you off forever if you screw this up.
Oh, that's kind of mean.
No. But you got to understand what I mean. But listen, if you just aren't good in a class and you get a bad grade, that happens.
Yep.
If you fail a class just because it's not your thing, that happens. If you just didn't sleep well, get sick, I get that. But if I know... that you didn't put 100% in, and I know that you let somebody else in your life get in the way of that, and that's why you didn't. Well, why? I don't want to stay and watch that. I don't want to stay and watch the destruction of what could have been a very high dream. So I have enough like for you to leave, and I would not feel guilty about that at all.
Okay. I have... I was so good in school, college, that I have 16 hours one year that I got 16 hours of F because I didn't go to class. I always found it difficult to concentrate. The dyslexia, I'm sure, didn't help. But it only took me 9 years to graduate. So I guess I understand... I'm glad I had people that stood with me. When I finally got out of the service and went back to complete my degree, I'm glad that people still stood with me. And sometimes you have to stand with people that are stupid like I am.
Well, but no, but the problem is there does come a point where, you know, I'm there during it. If I say to you, listen, I think this is what's happening. I see what's going on here. And you continue to go on that behavioral path. What am I there for?
Why do you think you're smart enough to know that you understand?
That you can see these things, Glenn.
Well, I think you consider yourself more important than you are sometimes to those people.
when I'm teaching students, uh-huh. I know when a student's goofing off. You don't have to have a PhD to know that. Yeah, so why wouldn't I know a friend was goofing off?
You wouldn't have stayed with me, I don't think, because I goofed off a lot. And 16 hours AF proves that.
Well, I'm just saying, you know, there does become a point in your life where if you keep waiting and you keep postponing, the door will close.
Yeah,
nobody lives forever.
I really thought it was going to close with me. And I remember when I left to go into the service, I said to my dad, I am so sorry. And he said, oh, don't worry about it. We spent $5,000 a year to get you socialized. And I thought, well, that's a pretty nice thing to think.
But isn't that an intervention? Isn't that what they do in interventions? They all walk in. And you say, listen, if you don't fix this problem, we're leaving you.
Yeah, I'm not a big fan of intervention.
Oh, I am.
Oh, I can see some of them would work.
I show up to interventions for people I don't know just so I can walk out on them.
I can see that.
Why not?
I can see that, Scott.
I come and I say, wow.
Now, I would go to an intervention with a person who had become an alcoholic because I think you can help by giving support. But not going to... Being lazy, I'm not sure you can intervene with people that are lazy like I was. Totally lazy.
Well, I just think it's, you know, sometimes the biggest fear people have is that people will walk out. And if sometimes you let them know beforehand that this will happen, maybe they will.
Now,
stick to it.
I can't use the words that I would use if you told me that. But I would basically say, get lost.
And if and if that's the case, good. Yeah. Then we both understand each other.
Yeah.
And that's where we are. And I would have no worry about that.
Yeah, and that's good. I'm glad you can feel that way.
Yeah.
And I'm kind of a social animal. I always worry what people think of me. And I know you don't. You do care what people think, but you don't worry about it. I worry about it.
Here comes the break. We'll be back.
Okay.
Scott, you know I love fruitcake so much that for me it's not just a Christmas dessert.
Oh, Charlie, I would not want it any time of the year.
Oh, Scott, you've not lived until you've had mashed potatoes and fruitcake, birthday fruitcake, graduation fruitcake, cream of fruitcake. And all the possibilities are endless.
WWGH Radio 107.1 FM. Don't miss it.
/180/111, and I had a stroke. I couldn't speak or walk.
/150/90, and I had a stroke.
This is what high blood pressure sounds like. You might not feel its symptoms, but the results from a stroke are far from silent. Get back on your treatment plan or talk with your doctor to create a plan that works for you. Go to loweryourhbp.org.
Head to toe, everything's changed.
Brought to you by the American Stroke Association, American Medical Association, and the Ad Council.
And if that PSA doesn't scare you to death, nothing will.
Yeah, and I've been to 150/90, so, and I did have a heart attack.
And a stroke for some people, apparently, according to the PSA.
That's what my father eventually died of. That's what my grandmother eventually died of. Now, my grandmother lived well into her 80s, and but my father didn't. My dad had a stroke, and his blood pressure was high, and mine is too, and so I got it. I got it legitimately, but he had a stroke when he was 68 or 67 and died at 68.
But don't you think, in general, what we were talking about before the break, that at some point, people are great in your life, but if you are reaching for something and the person has expressed that this is so great for them and this would be so great for them, and they do have it within their own ability to either succeed or sabotage. what they're going through. I don't want to see them sabotage it, so why would I want to be in the life of a sabotaged person?
Maybe you can stay there and help them unsabotage themselves.
Oh, Glenn, that's too much work.
I hear you. Now, see, I'm the type of person, I like being involved socially. I like people in general. I love most people in general. But when we come down to one person on one person, I'm not real good at that. I'm better with you on the radio than I am with a lot of people on that.
Oh, let's see. I'm good both ways, I think.
I'm not. I'd rather be with a bunch of people than with one.
I think there are certain people, though, who you just hit it off with better.
That's true, yeah.
And I think that creates a very unique bond over time. And maybe one day that person will become your 3 a.m. person.
Yeah.
Because you have a different type of a bond with them. But I just do think at some point you have to say, how much do I care? You know, and I think
that's always a good question.
Yeah, how much do you care? How much are you going to put into this thing to make it work? You know, I've always said this. When it comes to any type of relationship in your life, whether it's male, female, or whatever it is, the trait you need to look for is the support of that person in you, the belief of that person in you. Now, they don't have to be your groupie. They don't have to be that. But they can't be, oh, why do you need to do that? They can't be, oh, do you really need, oh, blow that off. Oh, no. They've got to be your biggest cheerleader. They've got to be, wow, isn't that great? Wow, that's so great that you did that. That's so amazing. That's where they need to be. And if they can't do that, then there's something else going on there.
Well, I'm never going to be your bestie. Because I'm not going to tell you.
How, that's where we were.
I'm never going to tell you how great you're. Well, I have told you.
You have told you. Too late.
Yeah, I know, but I'm not going to dote on you because.
Dote. I don't think it's dote. Doting? No, I don't think you dote on them. I think you just every so often when they are doing something great, you tell them. Just like you would tell anybody else.
You just be honest.
But some people, they see that as intimidating. They see that as them losing some kind of type of control.
And I know people like that, and that's one of the things when we've talked about being married for, like in my case, 50 years. There are people that want to be in control, and a good marriage is more of a 50-50 thing. But I'm a firm believer that when we got married, my wife had 55% and I had 45% of the control, and now I think it's kind of gotten closer to I have 51% and she has 49%.
Leveled back off.
Yeah.
I don't know. I just think that that's a trait that is very important that people should look for in other people. Other things you can find.
I try not to look for traits. I try to just be in the moment and like people in general.
Yeah, but the moment passes.
Yeah, but the moment's always going to pass. Our next moment is going to pass
right,
in
so
the moment.
I don't know if being in the moment is the best thing, but
well, I think
for long term, I don't know if being in the moment is the best.
Well, you don't want to. When I say being in the moment, I mean being honest with yourself, with what's going on.
And how many people do you think are?
Well, I don't think very many people are because not very many people have a best friend.
Back to this bestie thing. You don't have a bestie.
No. And I would never call anybody a bestie.
But you don't have a best friend.
I wouldn't say so, no. Other than my wife.
Oh, that's interesting.
Yeah. I mean, why should it? I think I'm more important than other people anyway, so. And maybe I think that's important that
you. Herein lies the problem with a best friend.
Yeah. You need to like them.
You got to like them. You know, and sometimes you have to like them better than you like yourself.
Oh, I can't imagine doing that.
Oh.
I mean, and I don't think that's good for you health-wise.
You don't think it's better to. I think you can look at somebody and say, wow, they're great. They are really.
Oh, yeah, you can do that. Yeah. I think of, you know, I think of you that way as far as interviews go. I think of, I think of Rob Lowe that way as far as good looks go. You know, there. But as in general, I wouldn't change me for the world.
Oh, no, I don't think you should want to change yourself, but I think you can admire people's... Like, I admire people who can sing, play instruments.
I can do both of those things, but you don't need to admire me for
it. Who can do it... You know, there are some people who can bring people to a... they can touch their emotion in that way. Yeah. They can touch their happiness in that way. To me, that's a trait.
Yeah, and you know, that's why when I sang with the folk trio that I sang with, that was one of the most enjoyable parts of singing, is you could feel yourself going out to the audience, and you could feel the audience coming back to you. It's real vague. I can't explain why, but that's one of the most exciting parts about being an actor or being a musician, is getting that feedback.
Well, instant feedback's fun. I think that's why stand-up comics love what they do.
Yeah, yeah.
Because you get it right there.
Oh, I wish I could do that.
Yeah, and that's another thing. Yeah. It's a great trait that some people have, that they're able to do that.
Yeah, yeah. And so, you know, I helped Mike Larson on his campaign running for the primary this time around. And Mike was a stand-up comedian. Is a stand-up comedian. He's been on Leno a couple of times, so he was a good one. And I just love to listen. But he can also be kind of boring. and it's not constant laughter when you're around him. Most of the time there's a smile on your face, but it's not constant laughter. But that is something I would love to be able to do.
You know, I found, though, that most comedians are very serious people.
He's very serious, yeah. Yeah.
I think comedy, what was it, the definition I heard the other day? Comedy is tragedy plus time.
Yeah, did I hear that on your show?
Yeah, you heard that on my show, yeah. Yeah. I think that's right.
Because I do listen to your show.
Well, if you fall down, that's a tragedy. But if you fall down and then some time passes, you look back at it as a comedy.
Yeah.
But it's not funny at the time.
Now, if you fall down, break your neck, and are paralyzed for life, you're not going to laugh about that.
No, but you know what? People laugh at some of the most horrible, heinous things in the world. They can find humor in them, and I think that's one of the things that keeps this country going, is we find humor in horrible events.
Yeah. That was one of the things that inspired me, or not inspired me, it uplifted me, I guess. Yeah, inspired. In my interview yesterday with Dean Kaler, though he was shot in the back during the Kent State thing, paralyzed for the rest of his life, and actually has lost, because of atrophy, he's lost both of his legs, probably up to his thighs by now, and yet he finds ways of finding funny and happy things. He was very lighthearted about being shot. So I admire people like that. I would probably be angry for the rest of my life.
Well, at some point, don't you have to you got to come to terms with it.
Yeah.
Do you want to be an angry person all your life? Or do you want to say, okay, this is the way it is?
Do you know people that are angry all the time? I do. I know a few.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I know angry people.
I just want to slap them.
Well, one time, Christopher Reeve, when he had that horrible accident.
Yeah.
Paralyzed him for life.
Yep.
And I remember he was being interviewed by somebody, and he was in the hospital, you know, paralyzed from the neck down and never gonna walk again. And his wife went to him at one point, because he was so depressed and whatever, and said, you know, I want you to stay. I love you. But if you want to check out, we'll find a way. We'll find a way to take care of this, because I understand what's going on here and I understand the gravitas of this. Well, one of Christopher Reeve's best friends was Robin Williams.
Uh-huh. Wow.
And I guess the next day or the next 2 days after they're having this conversation, Robin Williams shows up at the hospital and he puts on a gown and he puts on the mask and he comes in the room playing, I think it was a British proctologist who'd come into the wrong room, and Christopher Reeve didn't know who it was, and he says, you know, you're gonna have to roll over, and he was snapping the gloves and doing all this thing. And when Christopher Reeve found out it was Robin Williams, He said he started to laugh. And he said that was the moment he knew he wanted to live.
That's cool. Isn't that, that is
and
cool.
That's it.
Yeah.
That's well, it. When you can laugh at it.
Dean told me yesterday, well, maybe it was in one of my tweets with him. Dean says, I said, how did you get past that when you knew you were paralyzed? And he knew he was paralyzed from the moment the bullet hit his spine. He knew it. And he said, well, all I thought is, I'm not dead.
Yeah.
And that was good.
It was. And you know, you find those stories. Now, does anybody out there have a life-changing story like
yeah,
that? That'd
be
interesting to hear.
Very, yeah.
I don't think we've ever asked that. 7403.
A little heavy today here, Scott.
Well, we're okay. We've done the comedy portion of the show. 740-383-9944. That's 740-383-9944. Has there ever been something life-changing or something somebody said to you that has always stuck with you and continues to stick with you? Or maybe you heard somewhere.
I'd like to hear something that's been life-changing for you. I don't think you talk about that very much.
Well, I don't know that there has been anything.
Oh.
Not really.
Well, you are pretty young.
Well, I don't, yeah. That's well, I don't know. I mean, I can't think of anything that was life-changing.
The death of my sister was life-changing for me. My sister was like an angel. Truly, and I know that's way overboard in the hyperbole, but when she passed, that changed my life and added a little sadness into my life and seriousness into my life that wasn't there before. So,
Because
while she was still in this world, I knew I could go to her house and we'd have a good laugh and we'd play some games. But when she left, I knew that I had to stand on my own, kind of.
Well, I guess that's life-changing in that particular way. Yeah. I don't know that...
It wasn't heavy life-changing. Well, that's heavy, but it wasn't I found out I had cancer or anything like that.
Is there anybody you've ever met who just their sheer presence in your life has changed it?
You mean a non-family member?
Yeah, non-family member.
You're talking about... Reverend Kiger.
Really?
Yeah. Yeah. I've always been impressed with liberal ministers and people who proclaim to be very religious but have a sense of honor, honesty, concern for other people. So many religious people, unfortunately, and one of the reasons why I'm probably not anymore, so many religious people use it as a club to beat you into being a Christian, much like Muslims use their religion to beat you into being a Muslim. All religions have that, thus the Crusades.
Here comes the break. We'll be back in 1 minute. Stay tuned. Ted, I remember so well when you announced you were going to run for president on my show.
I do too. But after a while, I decided to get out of the race.
Why was that?
Well, I didn't want to move to a bad neighborhood.
WWGH Radio 107.1 FM, The Talking Place.
Which button am I?
When every second counts, you can't wing it.
Guys, a little help up here?
In a home fire, you may have less than 2 minutes to get out. So make a family home fire escape plan. Then practice home fire drills at least twice a year so everyone knows what to do when they hear. Prepare your family at ready.gov/firedrill. Brought to you by FEMA, the Ag Council, and Make Safe Happen.
Glenn Coble, Scott Spears back in for Charlie Evers on this Thursday, May the 7th, 2020, 46 minutes past the hour, and the phone is ringing. Go ahead, caller, you're on the air.
Is this Scott?
Yes.
Yeah, Scott, Dan Stahl calling. I was listening to your program with you and Glenn.
Yes.
And if you would give a hi to Glenn for me.
Hello, I can hear you.
Pardon me?
I can hear you. Hi.
Well, hi, Glenn. How are you?
Good.
I was calling in support of your remarks involving Dan Kiger.
Oh, good.
Dan was a good friend of my wife's. They worked together at Epworth Preschool Daycare when he was minister there. And the first guy I called when she passed away, or before she did.
Yeah.
And there was no question in my mind that he was going to be the guy to do the service and everything.
Yeah.
And just wanted to share that with you, that he is obviously a very caring, genuine individual.
Yeah, and he has a wonderful way of both supporting you in bad times and lifting you up in good times. Yeah.
Exactly.
I love him dearly.
Yes. Just wanted to share that with you.
No, we're glad you did. Thank
Fantastic.
You for calling.
Fantastic, yeah. It's nice to hear I'm not alone, and I know I'm not.
Phone lines are open. Those calls are good. 740-383-9944. That's 740-383-9944. And, you know, it's hard to talk about these things sometimes.
Yeah,
but they
is.
Are, you know, I'm sure there's somebody who's important to me, but I would have to think about it.
Yeah. Well, and I'm Dan, if you happen to be listening, or if you get a lot of people that say, hey, Dan, they talked about you on the radio today, I'm sorry if I embarrassed you, but you need to be embarrassed. You're a good human being.
Now, see, isn't this interesting, though, because you're doing exactly what you said you don't do.
What's that?
Overpraise somebody.
Yeah, but he would be, if I had a bestie, he would be it, other than
so
my
you're
wife.
Doing what?
I guess.
You just said you wouldn't do.
Well, sometimes I'm hypocritical.
You're hypocritical, Glenn.
Forgive me.
Oh, you've circled this show in a hypocritical form.
I don't know. I work a lot at self-evaluation, so I'll take that up with myself this afternoon and try to correct that.
See, but isn't it great, though, to be positive about it? I disagreed with you because I think you do need to do that. I think you do need to be positive about certain people. I think you do need to mention them about certain by name if you can. But the reason I'm vague is because I don't want the blowback from all these goofballs about, what's that all about? Blah, blah, blah.
Yeah, and being positive about people, I've never been anti-positive about people. I just find I've been in the public eye so long that I see the hypocrisy of a lot of people and, quite frankly, the dishonesty of people wanting to be the bestie of somebody who's famous. And that really gets old.
But don't you think the person bestie-wise, best friend, don't you think they know? I mean, somebody who just wants to be in the circle, you might not get that. Because they're just there and they're hanging around and blah, blah, blah. But bestie, I think, would indicate that you're sharing things with that person, that they're sharing things with you, that you're spending a lot of time around them.
There are a lot of people, and I bet there are people that treat you this way as well, that will share a lot with you, but you really don't want to know
exactly.
it.
Exactly. Exactly. But I wouldn't call them my bestie.
No. Yeah, yeah.
So that's the difference.
Bestie is a title. In this case.
Right. Now, see, I want to be people's bestie because I want to win the title, but I don't necessarily need a bestie.
Wait a minute. I'm going to get you a title and put it around your neck.
Bestie. A shirt. Well, earlier on, somebody said they were going to make me a shirt.
It wasn't me.
They never did tell me what that shirt was. If that person's still out there listening, before we go off the air in the next 10 minutes, let me know what the shirt was going to say.
It's going to say, I was stupid.
No. And then they're going to give it to you, Glenn?
Yeah.
Oh, my gosh.
No, what the other way around.
No, but I don't know what the shirt was going to say, but it had something to do with bestie. And then they threatened to hurt me.
Well, I'll stand behind you.
And this person has a violent streak in them.
Oh, good.
Oh, they did. I did not realize they had a... I knew they had a temper, but I did not know...
It's a girl, isn't it?
Well... I won't say. I don't want to implicate who it is, but I will say this, that until the other night, I did not realize that this person had a physical violent streak.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
I stay very clear of those. You know what? That brings up a point. My father, who everybody now knows, was a Methodist minister, a good man, an honorable man. He once told me, I had lost a girlfriend and I was feeling bad, and he told me about a girlfriend he lost. And the way he lost her, she tried to stab him in the front seat of a car.
That's a good time to call it quits.
And he called it quits.
That's a good time to say, well.
And it wasn't my mother.
This has been real. This has been fun, but not real fun.
Yeah. I have been stabbed once in the above the eye, and you don't want that to happen. It's not comfortable.
No, I think you want to avoid stabbing, shootings, all those things.
Yeah, stabbing's better than shooting, though.
Now, have you been shot?
No, I've never been shot. Thank goodness.
So we don't know.
I tried to shoot myself a couple of times in the Army, but...
You tried to shoot yourself?
Oh, I was so stupid in the Army. They teach you how to fire the M16 and the M1, and one time I almost got shot by my drill instructor. I walked back up the firing range with my gun pointed right at him in the shooting tower, and he wanted to shoot me.
So you weren't exactly a marksman.
Oh, I was. I was very good at it. I just didn't know how to handle the weapon.
Oh, man.
I tweeted a thing, by the way, that the other day. Now, this is going to get a little heavy again, and we'll probably get phone calls of people saying I'm anti-something. But I tweeted something to the effect that the thing I'm concerned about with carry conceal and open carry, the thing I'm worried about is that somebody's going to come out while all these people are standing around with guns threatening people. Somebody's going to come out with the other point of view with guns, and we're going to have a range war.
You think?
I'm thinking there's a lot of stupid people out there, yeah.
I don't think so. I think most people who have guns are discerning.
Oh, I agree with that. Most of them are.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So
but, I'm just talking about the crazies that went to the Michigan
But you've always got crazies. That's the problem.
That's what I'm afraid of.
Hasn't this coronavirus showed us this? The people who went in and coughed on all the meat in the grocery store?
Yeah, yeah.
You can't stop it. Well, the crazy's crazy.
This range war is going to happen between one group of really stupid people and another group of really stupid people on the other side. They're going to get together, and they're both going to be macho, and one guy's going to let one fly, and the other one, then the range war is going to start.
Well, I hope not.
Helter Skelter will start, and Charles Manson will come back.
And if this happens, I hope I'm not anywhere near.
Me too. Me too.
Now, where are we here? 53, 54 minutes past. What's on the show today?
I'm going to talk about. Really, it's nothing. I'm going to talk about.
Tune in for that, folks.
May Day. A lot of people. Well, May Day. I'm not talking about. May Day, we're crashing or anything like that.
No, the first day of May.
Yeah, and it's actually not the first day of May.
When is it?
It's May 1st through the 2nd, I found out.
It's over.
Yeah, well, yeah, it is over. But I'm going to talk about, some of the traditions. And
where did it come from?
That's what I'm going to find out.
Well, you can't give us a preview here?
No, I'm not going to tell you. Because, quite frankly, I haven't read that far in the book.
You're just going to read the book today.
Yeah, we're going to read the book.
You'll learn all about May Day coming up from 12:10 until 1 p.m. today. And then the Adam the Computer Guy show, 2:10 to 3 p.m. today. Right.
I wish
here.
I knew all that stuff about computers. Do you know a lot about computers? You're pretty good with
some.
It.
Yeah. Some.
I'm terrible. I'm not good.
I'm good. There are certain things, but there are certain things I have no idea about. Now, I've become much better at video editing.
Oh, I'd love to be able to
do that. I got a program a few Christmases ago that I've really been working in.
Cool.
And I like it.
Yeah, I'd like to learn that too. You know, I always wanted to be, I was a sound engineer my last year with the Army Field Band because the other two guys got early outs. My last year was sound engineer for the Army Field Band. And I always wanted to be a sound engineer. And then about 30 years later, maybe 10 years ago, I thought, I'll be a sound engineer. It's completely different.
Oh, yeah.
It's all done by electronics.
The whole thing has changed.
I used to have to cut tape with a razor blade and splice it together that way. Now it's done on a screen. I love it.
Well, I remember television news for years when reporters would have to go out and they'd film.
Yeah.
They'd use film.
Yeah.
And they'd have to drop it in that soup.
Yeah.
That I don't know what that did.
It probably developed the film.
Yeah, but it was... Oh. awful. I don't know how they ever got through that. You didn't get anything on the air fast in those days.
Well, you could outside. Get it on in about an hour and a half.
Hour and a half.
Yeah.
The world ended an hour and a half ago, and here comes the pictures.
If the world ended, you didn't care.
You didn't care. Well, you know, it was yesterday when Jeff got... It was so strange, because on Monday morning, the 50th anniversary of the Kent State shootings, I told that story about Dorothy Fulltime, and it's so weird that Jeff would come in yesterday and bring that up, that exact story. But I think that's such a great story. Go back in the archives and listen to
it. Yeah, yeah.
About Dorothy Fulton.
I'm going to have to do that.
She was a big... I cannot believe you don't remember Dorothy.
No, I don't. Sorry.
Well, because she was a national... She did Jack Parr. She did Johnny Carson. She did Phil Donahue. Because she was kind of an oddity in that she was in her 80s and 90s, and she didn't come to television until she was in her 50s. And she was the oldest person on television. But she was a strong newswoman.
Yeah.
And Cleveland got a lot of notoriety out of her because every celebrity that came to Cleveland, every politician, presidents.
Kind of like Eleanor Clift, who really didn't hit her full stride until she got probably into her 60s.
Well, Eleanor was a writer and essentially still is.
Yeah.
You know, so, but Dorothy's last interview was with Ronald Reagan, who was president at the time.
Is that right? Mm-hmm. Huh. Wow. Interesting.
And she had a stroke that afternoon. That's irony. Wow. That's irony. What are the chances that your last interview would be with the president?
Yeah, and then have a stroke. Wow.
Have a stroke. She lived for about 5 years, but she just couldn't come back.
Yeah, no, strokes back in those days, back a few years ago, you didn't come back from a stroke. You lived with whatever you had. Yeah, but that's what my dad lived for a year after his stroke, and it was, you know. He was diminished quite a bit.
Well, I think it's pretty well still that way. If it gets past a certain point, you are just in trouble.
But if you get in there during what they call the golden hour, they can get you back pretty well.
But the problem is you don't really feel all that sick.
No, so make sure you know what the symptoms are. If your one side of your face starts going soft, or if I don't remember all the here I'm talking about it and I don't remember all the different
is it May Stroke Awareness Month?
I don't know.
I think it's either April or May. I know it's one of those.
Then that's going to be my next Thursday. I'm going to talk about stroke awareness.
Look this up.
All right, you look that up and I'll tell you a little bit briefly what happened to my dad. He I remember my mom calling me and she said, your dad's not doing well. I said, what's the matter? She said, I have no idea. She had no idea what was going on with my dad when he was having his stroke. And he was at the top of his game at the time, and he didn't go uphill after that, unfortunately.
May is National Stroke Awareness Month.
Cool.
So we're in the middle of it.
All right, then a week from today, I will be talking about Stroke Awareness Month.
You know, I used to have Robert Guillaume on, who was Benson.
Yeah.
He had a stroke.
Yeah, he did.
In the middle of his career.
And he came back and
did
a good job after.
I mean, he got his voice back, but, you know, he still always had paralysis in one arm. But he did come back and did some great roles.
The guy who is the barber on Andy Griffith show, he had a stroke while they were filming it. And you'll notice... Pre-stroke, he's walking around talking. Post-stroke, and he stayed on the show all the way through the Griffin show. He always is sitting down. You never see him standing up.
Because he couldn't walk.
I'm sorry?
Because he couldn't walk
longer. Yeah. But
it's interesting.
Kind of crazy.
Well, we've hit our stride today.
Yeah, we have.
So Swap Shop with Glenn Goble talking about May Day is coming up in about 10 minutes. And then the Adam the Computer Guy show 2 to 3 today and a whole bunch of other great programming between now and then. Get well soon, Charlie. And we'll be back with more programming right after this.
Oh, and you're from Cleveland, Ohio. Republican National Convention inside. I am sitting right now inside the Quicken Loans Arena, looking at the Oregon delegation from the rafters.
No kidding, you're among the seats.
I am in the seats right now. I can see Oregon and Indiana and New Hampshire. I am in the arena.
Wow. Say, Scott, were you there last night for Cruz?
I was, and let me tell you, one of the discussions yesterday certainly was on the division feeling here at the Republican National Convention. And if the boos you heard on television was something last night, you should have heard the boos in this arena.
No kidding.
To Republican candidate for president, Donald Trump.
We welcome to these microphones Donald Trump. Donald, how are you?
God, how are you?
Doing very well. What a busy...
I have to tell you, I've slept in days. I'm very, very excited. This is going to be a phenomenal, phenomenal convention. Probably the biggest star study.